Hello and welcome everybody to episode 64 Mission Darts podcast. And I haven't had a shout out for ages, Matt, for some new subscribers. Got loads of people watching last week, not many subscribers. So please, if you're not following us, please hit the subscribe button on YouTube and hit the follow button on audio. How are you?
I mean, you know why we had lots of new viewers last week, because you've been too controversial. You need to behave yourself.
Yeah, I'll behave myself. I'll try my best. Yeah.
Don't want to be on the
back of the sun again. Right, okay. So
one of the things Andy really struggles with is listening. So like, I'm sure that won't last long. Yeah, but in general, doing all right. I mean, we know I've just come off the back of Modus. That was fun. I actually enjoyed that. Mm. Do you know what? I put a tweet out about this yesterday. I said, I've never practiced as much as I think all year. I haven't touched a dart barely. And then since Modus, I've been practicing for hours. I'm loving it. Like, I think the fact I played pain-free and I got what I wanted out of it, I was competitive. I played better than I expected.
Yeah,
you did. I thought I'd be low 80s. I thought if I break an 83, I'll be happy. 83 is like the benchmark. That's 18 darts. 18 darts is 6 visits. 6 visits is competitive. So, and that's competitive up to pretty much the tour. You need to be looking at those 6 visits. So I was where I needed to be. I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Results maybe not quite there because the rustiness of it, but I didn't go for results. I went to see what it was like, and I was better than I expected by a long way.
You were better than I expected. So I've seen you obviously throw and know how good you can be, but I still thought 9 months since you've thrown a competitive dart, this is going to feel like a nightmare. Because you know what it's like. If you played again this week, it'd be much easier than last week. And we all know that from the tour and everything. But I, against Fallon, the first game, I was like, what's going on here? He's 3-0 up. He's missing nothing. He's like, yeah, what's happening? He's going to win the whole bloody thing. I'm getting super excited. It was on way too late at night, but I managed to stay up and watch it. And then obviously you just didn't get over the line. And I wanted you to get over the line with the 154, because that would have just been the best talking point, finishing on double 17. After we spoke about that a few weeks ago, it's the least used double on the board. I thought, oh, this would just be typical Matt, this. And you just wired it, didn't you? But yeah, no, let's talk a bit more about Modus while we're on it. I enjoyed obviously watching you. I thought when you said, oh, I've seen the group and I fancy it and this, that and the other, I didn't expect it to be that hard. That was a tough group. That was really tough.
Yeah, the numbers stacked up to be one of the best groups of the year, you know, statistically. Mm. Everyone produced. And some of that will also come down to the lack of fear factor that I've probably got right now as well, in the fact, like Paul Hogan played the best game of the whole tournament against me.
Yeah.
Of his best of that. Tom Sykes kicked off, was it 13-13?
Yeah.
12 or something stupid like that.
Crazy,
like,
yeah.
You know, it was bonkers. You know, that's elite level darts. Fallon from 3-0 down played well. She never missed a chance.
She played great. And Paul Hogan, you mentioned him there, Matt. I thought back in the day he could have had a go, you know. He could have had a – because he was always at Lakeside, wasn't he? And you always saw him win these Opens around – and I played him a couple of times. I was like, this guy's a player. I mean, I don't know how old he is now, but he can still damn well play.
62.
Wow. Fantastic.
So here's a shout out to people. In the comment section, I want to know who is that guy who in your local area was the hero, but never really did it for either didn't want to travel, didn't want to commit to things, whatever the reason was. Because I can name two off the top of my head straight
away. Go on, you go. I've got one on my head. You go.
My local area, but these are players you'll probably know. And the players you probably know because they probably should have achieved more. First one you've just named him, Paul Hogan.
Yep.
Second one, Johnny Haynes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Johnny the Hitman?
The Punk.
What was his name? The Punk, yeah. I can picture him. Skinny bloke, yeah. Slim bloke.
Dead, yeah. Always wore combat trousers.
Yeah. Yeah, good player.
Very
good player. Very, very good player. From my area, Andy Gudgeon. Don't know if that name means anything to you or not.
Sounds familiar, actually.
Yeah, I think he's got the record for Lancashire appearances. Played for England several times. Won everything there is to win in the amateur game, I think, but never took it any further. I had a good job, good home life. And I was, he used to literally turn up on a Thursday night with us lads. We'd just go down the pub, turn up on a Thursday night, would not have picked his darts up, wouldn't even pick them up on the night, Matt. Like, wouldn't it sit there with a pint, have a chat with the lads. Andy, you're on. Andy, you're on. Oh, right, okay. He'd average 100. He was ridiculous. Left-handed, like 6'3", Andy, something like that. Unbelievable.
But you've just summarised it there, and I can relate to this. You've got a nice family life, good job. Mm. I have the good job now. I love what I do. I enjoy what I do. Off the back of this, people know my journey. You say I haven't played competitive darts for 10 months. That was one game at Lakeside. Before that, I hadn't played since the World Masters, which was 2 months prior. Before that, I hadn't played for 2 months since August, which was the Welsh Open. So you could say in 14 months, I've played the Welsh Open, the World Masters, and Lakeside. Three tournaments. So it's barely anything in just over a year. And
the people you're playing, Matt, they're doing ADC 2-3 nights a week. They're doing Modus. They're non-stop. Darts is a non-stop sport now if you want to play it. It's every night of the week if you want to play it. So,
but then you look at like people know like my lack of practice. I mean, you know for sure build up to this. I was doing Pro Tour for 3 days.
Yeah,
I did Modus commentary. I was up in Bolton.
Two days. Filming without me because I was ill. Yeah,
I did the player filming that the guys will get to see on the channel soon. I then had to travel down to Portsmouth on the Wednesday. So in terms of practice, I probably didn't really get any practice for 2 weeks beforehand, bar one live stream I managed to do on Saturday here. And I was like, I need to have a throw. And Saturday was the only chance I could do it. So I barely practiced. I hadn't played for a while. And then everyone knows that song. They're like, oh, do you think maybe if you practice, you could do it again? And I'm like, I don't think I'd want to, even if I could. For reasons that was always said. Like, I enjoy what I do too much.
Yeah, exactly. And you've absolutely nailed it. We don't segment the podcast. We never do. We fly by the seat of our pants. But you've segmented perfectly into a question from Mark Marlowe, who sent us a long email. I mean, this is like proper long email, and he's having a bit of a rant. And I've picked out the bits that he's saying. He's kind of singling out Michael Smith a little bit, but he's talking about other players in general. And I want to get your take on this. He's saying, have they forgotten the fact that they get to play a game to earn a living? And he goes on to say his own personal circumstances, which I'm not going to repeat. You know, he's finding life tough, okay? And a lot of people out there are finding life tough, you know, inflation and everything else. People haven't got as much money in their pocket. Mm. And he's saying, I'm sick to death of hearing them moaning about playing conditions, prize money, traveling here, traveling there. He said, I'd give my right arm, as would a lot of people, to have a chance to do what they do. Is it time that they shut up and realised how lucky they are? What are your thoughts?
No. I think it's very easy to look from the outside and think the grass is green on the side so much. But actually, you know, and then the other thing is, if you don't want to hear people talk about that sort of stuff, that's the real life of it. That's the real side of things. So if you take away the reality of it, you're going to end up with a performance. And do you really want a performance? You know, so, I think it's important that people say how they really do feel about it. And I think it's one of those things that, I mean, a lot of people say to me about, oh, it must be great. And, you know, you get to travel to all these places. But the thing is, and people don't mind airports. And the reason they don't mind airports is because they only go to them once a year when they're going somewhere fun on holiday. It's part of the experience. When you're in airports all the time, it's not as fun anymore. It's a lot of sitting around waiting. It's a lot of just trying to train yourself. A lot of the time you're on your own because, like me, I used to travel with Ryan Searle, but Ryan Searle lives far down south. So we wouldn't meet up till we at least got to the airport or even landed on the other side. So there's a lot of I don't want to use the word loneliness with it, but there's a lot of that that comes with it. And like as I said, the grass is always greener on the other side. People forget about all the other or don't even realize all the other issues that come with having a professional sportsman status, even if you're not earning a professional sportsman salary. I talk about this stuff all the time where it's like, well, now you can't just have car insurance. You have to have professional sportsman's car insurance, which costs about 10 times more, you know, and there's loads of things like that. You need special travel insurance. You can't, you know, there's loads of things you can't just do anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah. There's a lot that comes with. So I think, you know, and again, everyone's like, oh, I'd give anything to do that. And, you know, we all feel like that, don't we? You know, like, you know, we see the supermodel on TV. Oh, I'd do anything for to be with her or whatever. But I guarantee she's going to nag you the exact same way your missus does, to the point where you're like, oh, come on, look, can't you go back to sliding up and down the car looking all soapy like you did beforehand? Yeah. You know, like, and I guarantee her walking out in that little leather miniskirt stops when she's coming out in a onesie, coming out the shower with no makeup on. And like, you look at her and you're like, oh, the dream is not so much of a dream.
Oh, Matt, sliding down the car, the soapy car, that's going to be the quote of the day. But for once, I'm going to have to agree with you here. I'm going to have to agree with you and give you a slight sidebar to it. Because you did the BDO tour to a point last year, and I did it for a year, and I agree with you. That all that traveling drives you insane. You know, getting on the dartboard and playing darts and having the crack and earning money, that's the fun bit. Getting to an airport, your flight's delayed, they've lost your bag. You get there, there's no taxis available. It's chucking with rain. It's minus 20 because you're in Norway. And then you get to your hotel and it's like you might as well sleep in the street. It's that bad. All that's, and then you can't find anywhere to eat and everywhere.
Oh, there's always you can find a bakery. Yeah. A bakery. Yeah. That's, and they all do all cheese sort of sandwiches stuff on crusty bread.
Yeah. It's, so all that sort of side of things is a nightmare. I would, and also the bit we haven't mentioned is I was lucky enough, as were you in last year and the year that I did it, that I had finance in another way. So I had a good job. You have your other jobs. We didn't need to get a paycheck to pay the mortgage. You know, we didn't need to finish third in the tournament to pay the mortgage. Some of these guys, if they don't get through the Pro Tour one day, they don't know if they can afford to go to the next one. You know, it's so that's not, that is not fun. That is not fun if that's, I guess, if I'm going to flip it slightly, it's going to maybe the top 16 in the world. They get invited to a lot of events. They'll be staying in better hotels. They're taking, some of them are taking their families with them. And maybe I was a bit, you know, a bit controversial about the Johnny Clayton comments a couple of weeks ago. He was saying, oh, everything should be in the UK. And I was a bit like, I don't really, I'm not on board with that. Maybe they've got it a little bit easier, but they've damn well earned it. You know, they haven't got there by just turning up one day and going, look how good I am. They've earned it. So, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one, Matt, that it's not all the roses that everybody thinks it is.
No, it really isn't. And, you know, I think maybe sometimes people don't explain it as well as maybe they could. And because the other thing as well you've got to remember is, like, flight times. Like flight times are terrible a lot of the time. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning, so you're leaving the house at 2. And yeah, it's not a lifestyle that I would advise too many people on. It might seem sunshine and rainbows, but it really ain't. But that's going to bring me to something we haven't done for a while. Matt's rant of the week.
Oh, here it is. I love it.
Do you know what? Like, I love the podcast because it gives me that vehicle to come on and moan about something. And there's two things I want to moan about today. Number one, upselling. I am sick to death of upselling. It's getting ridiculous. So I went and got my hair cut this morning, and then I thought, I haven't had any breakfast. I'm going to pop into Greg's. I'm going to get a bacon roll. And I've gone in. Can I get a bacon roll, please? Would you like it as a baguette? No. Would you like it with sausage? No. Would you like egg with it? No. Would you want some hash browns? Just give me a bloody bacon roll. Like, all I want is a bacon roll. If I wanted hash browns, I'd say, can I have a bacon roll and some hash browns? And it's all the time. Everywhere you go. Can I have some chicken nuggets? Would you like 9? Yeah, go on then. Do you want 20? I only want chicken nuggets. Like, can I have that with some chips? Do you want large chips? Do you want it as a meal? It's like, leave me alone. Like, stop upselling me on everything. Everywhere I go, I can't just have what I want. It's got to be something else. Even going to the petrol garage. Would you like these? They're on offer at £1. I just want some petrol. I don't want no chocolate balls. I just want, give me some petrol.
Bottle of water. We got a bottle of water. Oh, do you know they're 2 for £3, mate? Yeah, but I don't want to. I just want, can I just buy a bottle of water? I totally get what you're saying.
It winds me up. And it's getting stupid, but not as stupid as my trip. So when I finished at the Super Series, I went on online, as I do, retro toy shops in the area, and I found one. Went to Worthing. To be fair, spent way too much. We dropped about £1,000. I came out with 5 graded wrestling figures. Missy's got some Pokemon cards and some stuff like that, and we dropped £1,000, and I'm like, right, we've got to stop doing this. And then she goes, well, I've always wanted to go to Brighton. Brighton's like 20 minutes down the road. Should we go to Brighton? Yeah, go on. Let's go to Brighton. It looks good, doesn't it, in the pictures? Looks like a great place. Worst place I've ever been to. I'm like, what a boring place Brighton is. Like, I got to Brighton, and not only that, but my God, do they like to charge for stuff. I've got there, right? I pulled into the car park, £7 an hour. For Jesus. Parking. So we've gone for fish and chips. And I'm like to the missus, like, come on, hurry up. And she's like, I wouldn't let my dinner go down. I'm like, £7 an hour, I'm parking here. Hurry up. Like, we've got to get around and see everything quick. So
running down the street.
I've got a battered saveloy, because I've never heard of a battered saveloy before. So I had a battered saveloy, chips and a curry sauce, right? I've got a can of Pepsi Max. The missus have got fish fingers and chips and a can of Pepsi Max. Guess the price.
£20. £20 sounds right for that.
£33. Right? £33. I've gone in, right? And when I've gone in, I've gone to order, and the guy goes, oh, no. You order on the tablet, right? So I've ordered on the tablet. Right?
In a chippy?
In the chippy. Order on the tablet. Right, I've gone over. All the tables are still dirty, so I've had to get them to wipe one down so we can sit down, because all the tables have got like things on. And the cheekiness of it, they didn't ask, would I like to tip? They said, how much would you like to tip? I'm like, I'd like to tip nothing. Go away. I've just ordered it myself. Yeah. The table's dirty. All you've done is take chips out of the fryer from there and walk them here. And you want a tip. And it's like minimum 10%. I'm like, no, get out of it, pal. Get out of it. Unbelievable. And then, so we're going around Brighton.
What's Brighton like? I always thought it was rubbish. Like Blackpool in the south. Is it not?
Blackpool?
Is it not right? Like, it's got a pier. Has it got a pier?
It's got a pier. It's got 2 arcades that are rubbish. Nothing in them. A couple of fairground rides. An overpriced ice. £3.50 for the cheapest ice cream. £3.50 for a 99. Where's 99 gone? Like, so we're going round and we're looking, and I said to her, I'm like, this is rubbish. I'm like, it's just coffee shops. There's nothing here. Just coffee shops and cafes. And then she goes, oh, well, we can go up on that I-360 and we'll have a look around Brighton. And I'm like, what? We'll look at it from a higher angle now. So we went up there and it was rubbish. And then I've come down. She goes, right, let's stay tonight. And I'm like, to do what? Like, why are we going to stay here? So she gets a video up on YouTube. Top 10 things to do in Brighton. It didn't sell it very well to me. Like, so top 10 things to do in Brighton. And like number 2 was like this archway. And I'm like, an archway in a park. That's number 2, is it? That's as good as it gets.
Wow.
Like, where's the pleasure beach? You know, where's the water park? You know, where's all the good stuff to do? So I'm like, look, we can't stay here. Like, let's go somewhere. So I end up going home. Like,
I thought you'd have gone Skegness, even though it's nowhere near.
I suggested that.
Because you do like Skeggy.
But yeah, genuinely, we was meant to be there for 2 days and we was gone in half a day. It was the most boring place. And we walked around the town. And again, I'm just like, oh, more coffee shops. Like,
you don't even drink coffee. So.
It was heat. There was loads of people there. all your Londoners in it, like walking around. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, apples and pears, apples and pears.
Oh yeah, we're at the beach for the day. We've come to the beach. See,
it weren't even sand. It weren't even sand. It was stones. Weren't even a sandy beach. Can't even make a sandcastle. It was rubbish. One of the highlights, right? One of the highlights on the things to do in was up on the top. You know, like the promenade bit. There was like a bit of grass. That was one of the highlights. There's grass on the promenade. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. My garden's full of grass. I don't need to go to the seaside to sit on some grass. Paying £7 an hour for parking and £33 for some fish fingers and a bit of saveloy. Like,
Not impressed with Brighton.
It was rubbish. Like, the missus, like, should we have an ice cream? And then I look at it and I'm like, well, if I'm having ice cream, I'm going to have it with flake, I want some sauce and some nuts.
Yeah.
She's the same, you know, we want the full Monty. There's no point in having ice cream and not having the full Monty. You're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
And when we looked at it, I'm like, look, I'm not paying 14 quid for two ice creams. Like, but this is where you always laugh about me, because I'll sit here and rant about this. £1,000 for some wrestling figures. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, give me that. Yeah, £7 for parking. I'm not doing that. Get me.
We're off home, love. Enjoy your holiday. We're off. We went. We've gone. 3.5 hours we lasted.
Oh, brilliant, mate. Absolutely brilliant. Right, a couple of questions for you, mate, because they're modus related and you're the man to ask. So this is coming from Alan Slater, who's saying, great effort this week, Matt, on the modus. But hey, up, he's gone. Just got a question for him and he's disappeared.
I'm trying to listen, but I've got wired headphones on. So
oh, you're trying to get a can of pop?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you're right. You get yourself a pop and try and listen. He'll be back in a sec, listeners. He's just getting himself a can of pop. He couldn't just get up out of the chair like a normal person. No, he had to like shimmy across. Right. What are we on today then? What's today's podcast sponsored
by? I've gone for a 7-Up.
7-Up. Right. Okay. Alan Slater, great effort this week at Modus, Matt. Question for you. And it is a good question. I haven't got a clue the answer to this. Why does Modus evening sessions on Thursday and Friday start at 9 p.m.? Is it something to do with North American fans? He says it's just too late for me with work the next day. So why does it start that late, Matt?
So the Super Series originated during COVID. And it originated and it was sort of funded through bookies. Because there was no live sport on at the time. So they had to be very sparing with it. Remember, the football calendar used to be the same, where because there wasn't lots of availability for slots, they went, right, we're going to stagger it. So we're going to have a game at 12, a game at 2, a game at 4, a game at 6, and you had a whole day of watching football. It was great. That was when I was great on FPL as well, because I used to sit scouting. Yeah, I was that sad. So you get a little bit of horse racing, a little bit of dog racing, you get a little bit of sport on, and then it'd stop. So they wanted more live action sport, because what happened is people started like gambling on FIFA and things like that, didn't they? So there was an opportunity with darts that they could fill in those time slots. So 9:30 till 1 before the horse racing started. That's when your group A, B, you know, the morning sessions would be.
Yeah.
And then group B in the evening, because all your football matches had finished and everything had on, 10 o'clock start because everything had finished. And this has never changed.
They've just stuck with it. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay, well explained. Yeah, good. Chris Moorthorne has said he's been watching Modus. He was excited to see how Matt got on, especially with his Matt Edgar darts available in 21, 23 and 25. He got it in before you did.
Right here, 23 grand.
He said, and then he said, uh-oh, Modus stated he was still using Loxley darts. Bit of a mistake there on their part, I think. But then he said, my question is, when a player signs a branded contract and they go through, the brand goes through the effort of making the darts, marketing them, are the players then expected or contracted to play with that specific dart? And does it hurt or annoy the brand if they don't? And he's used Van Gogh as an example. He was still using his old darts, even though he was signed to a new company. So I guess it's kind of a question for both of us here. Have you ever been under contract and still kept using your old dart? I mean, that does happen when you're waiting for your new darts to be made. I know that. Yeah. And no, as a brand manager, we're not particularly bothered if you use a different flight because there's so many different systems now. You might want to use an L style or a Cosmo, as you were doing, or a Mission or whatever it is. But barrel wise, does your player's contract say?
Look at that. That's from one night's action. How much to chop them up?
Yeah.
They're what, like 12 quid a set?
Yeah.
And I absolutely batter them. But I think is that like my angle of entry, I'm guessing, isn't it? Because I'm
So the question is, are you expected to use the darts that you're signed to use? Is it as simple as that? Or could you turn up with a different brand and whatever?
Do you know what? I honestly don't know. I've never really challenged it. I know not all of our players use their signature darts. Some use other darts within the range. But for me, I like things to be authentic as well.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to play with the same darts I do, I like the fact that they can do that. Like that, literally, that is the dart I use, and all of that is available on the website. And if you want to throw or have a setup the same as mine, you can. And I like that sort of authenticity of it. What I don't ever like is sort of the sale of something that you don't believe in. Like, as you can imagine. And as I've shown you a lot of things, I get a lot, and I mean a lot, of various products, whether it's within this industry or within supporting supplementary industries towards darts, things such as energy drinks or like different bars and things that they think would be good for players, different gels, massage guns, you know, all this sort of stuff. And you'll notice that I barely advertise any of it. Because I will only advertise something that I believe in. I can't do it. I can't go, I'd get this just because they've offered me a deal. I'd rather not take the deal rather than tell someone to get something that I don't believe in, which is why you'll see me not advertise hardly anything. I'll advertise the Matt Edgar darts. The Taurus 270 is the best light in the business. I fully agree with that.
New board, while we're on it, the new board, Kate, it's out now. It's out. If you've not got one already, grab on quick, the Samurai 4. Phenomenal board.
Yeah.
And you've advertised that,
I advertised that to the best of my knowledge, you know, because the main thing people want to know about is durability. That's the question. Now, durability, I've turned my board once, and I left it deliberately on the 20 to see how long I could leave it for, and I've turned it once. And it looks amazing. If I could get the camera closer, because it's still on the wall now, I'd probably show you, but I don't think it's going to reach. So,
don't do that. Whatever you did then, the camera froze, so don't do that.
I didn't do anything. Don't do that. I didn't do anything.
Something happened when you got closer to the camera. It wasn't very happy.
Right, let's have a quick look at, I'm going to see if I can do something quickly.
You're going to try and be really clever, and anyway, while he's doing that, I'll pose a question, because Matt can have a think about it, and you can have a think at home. I heard this come out of a commentator's mouth at the weekend, and it was, how many titles? Oh my god! He's added his right. I'll get back to that question because he's added his phone as a right now. I need to add that, so hang on one sec. Right, I've added you now.
Look at this.
We've never done this before, so if everything crashes now at 30 minutes, we know why. Right, you need to turn your camera around. There you go. Here we go.
So I've switched it to here.
Wow,
that was the 20s there.
Wow. I mean, mine's equally as impressive, but that is just incredible.
So that's after about a month, and then this one's been up for a few weeks.
Wow. That's amazing. Oh, I tell you what I need to do. That's it. Right. Just talk again now, Matt.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. So what I've done now is muted the mic on your phone so that the sound is still coming out of your other one because it was coming out of both. So that's much better now. But that looks amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely brilliant. Right, get yourself sat back down again. That was very clever. I'm impressed with that, Matt. I don't know how you did it. We'll talk afterwards. I'll remove that now as a camera. There you go. You're back. He's back. And everybody at home is going, oh, my God, that's probably the most technologically advanced thing those two have ever done. So on that note, I was just about to ask a question. One of the commentators said about how many PDC titles Michael Van Gerwen has won since he joined the PDC. Would you like to have a guess?
How many titles Michael Van Gerwen's won?
143. Wow, that's a phenomenal guess. It's actually 158.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, that's a lot of titles. Now, I know he's been around a lot a while, but that's a lot of titles, 158. It just sprung out as me as being a massive...
Out of interest, is it 143 ranked titles and maybe 15 non-ranked, like World Series?
Could be, yeah. There could be Invitational or World Series. Yeah, yeah, you might have nailed it there, yeah.
Because I seem to... The numbers spring to my mind for some reason. Because obviously I covered a lot of PDC darts this year, and I seem to think that number is relevant for something. So it might be ranked titles. It might not be 143 exactly. It might be like 144 or 142.
Yeah,
it's around that area where I reckon it might be ranked titles.
Great shout. Great shout. Right, we've got to talk halfway through the pod, and we haven't even mentioned the winner of the Europeans, which I was nice to see, other than the fact that I lost another fiver. I was nice to see a new winner. Yeah, you're a tenner up now and you're going to have double acquits on the Grand Slam when it comes around. It was nice to see Jan van Veen win. And a couple of things I wanted to say, certainly with regards to the final, I don't know if you watched it or not, but Humphries' 85 on the bull from 10-9 down was phenomenal. To go 10 apiece, unbelievable, right in the middle of the ball. I've been in those situations and not got anywhere near the ball. To actually ping the ball right in the middle when you have to, otherwise you've lost, was incredible. But what I want to talk about is Jan van Veen's 100 finish in the final. Now, he went my kind of route. He went 20, 48, 32. And the reason he did that was because he blocked the treble 20, I think. We've seen him throw the phantom dart before. He does it now and again. Some of the Asian players do this quite a lot. Paul Lim does it a lot. The phantom dart, where you just pretend you're throwing it before you throw it. He did this on tournament dart. So he went single 20, 48, stood back, threw a phantom dart. He might have even done it twice. Might have even thrown two phantom darts, stood up and pinged it right in the middle of double 16. So... is this something we should all be doing, Matt? Should we all be throwing a phantom dart when it means something? What's your opinion on
that? He does that because of dartitis.
Oh.
He had dartitis, so that was sort of a method around it. I think, if anything, that's shown to me a different level to Van Veen that I haven't seen before. Because to break rhythm... due to a lack of composure, that wasn't phantom darts like, oh, I'm doing this. That was because he didn't feel comfortable and he broke his rhythm. That dart was like throwing dart one again, and dart one's the hardest one to throw. And to do that and then deliver that was unbelievable. Like I say, Humphries has shot before, but did Humphries look a little bit off to you at times? Like the throw didn't... I need to see this more, but... it didn't look as smooth as it normally would. It looked like he was releasing early.
Yes.
To the point the darts dropped at times.
Yes, yes. It looked... obviously, I watch players throw all the time, as you do, but when I'm doing fittings and stuff, on his way back to then releasing, looked quicker than normal. So it was almost like he wasn't giving himself time to get set, because he has quite an unusual style. But yeah, I noticed the same. He was kind of releasing
a bit
quick.
Off, weren't they?
Yeah, he never looked that comfortable the whole time. And I thought, if he wins this, he's winning it with his A-minus game here. His averages were still decent, but it just didn't look like the dominating. Now, whether that was because Van Veen was putting him under pressure, whether it was because he'd already played, you know, and he was mentally fatigued, or we'll probably never know.
I did the Euro tour. Prague, wasn't it? I did Euro tour in Prague recently. And Luke Humphries won that, but he never played his best. What a sign of quality. When in 2025, when you don't need to be at your best and you're still competing for titles. Because he's running up for the last two tournaments.
I've said it 1,000 times, Matt. To players that I'm coaching, to good amateur players, it's not how good your A game is, it's how good your B game is. That's so important to me. You know, we've all got 105, 110 average when we're on it. We saw it a bit of you in the modus. Your A game, everybody's got an A game that's in that 100 plus. It's how, what is your B game? And if you look at players that have struggled over the past 12 months, the players that are dropping down the rankings, your Peter Wrights, your Joe Cullens, your Mike Smiths, etc., it's because their B game is just not there. Peter Wright's been averaging 75 in his B game. That's not going to win you anything. So they've got to, you look at your Humphries, you look at your Littlers, you look at your Gerwin Price and your Van Gerwen, their B game's still 92, 93. That still wins your games.
So Chris Mason, who I think is probably one of the best analysts in the game.
Yeah, great.
He spoke on commentary about this, and he was commentating on Peter Wright. And he goes, we're not saying Peter Wright can't perform and can't produce because the evidence is there, but the gaps between the performance are getting bigger. And you can't ignore that. And when he said that, I went and looked at his stats. And it's like, yeah, Peter Wright's averaging 95. But then the next 95 average is 8 games away, 10 games away, 12 games away. Where before, it'd be one match or no matches. It'd be next one's 95, next 95. There's no. And it ended up being the fact that the low 90 or the 80 average would be the odd one out. Where now the 95 has become the odd one out. Sort of reverse interval training.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could almost, you know, we could almost be hypercritical. Why not? I usually am, and say that a little bit about you at Modus. When you were smooth and on it, it was 100 average. You looked unbelievable. I was like, Jesus, this guy, you should still be on tour. But then when, you know, the odd game, you'd hit a couple of 41s and an 85 and and it costs you. And that's just because you're not sharp anymore. These guys are so sharp. Yeah.
Imperfection of throw. So what I noticed in one of my games, you may notice this because the camera even picked up on it, but they never picked up on it in comms. Like moving the dart from hand to hand, there was times I'd misgrip it. I wouldn't just pass it across. So I did it. And I'm like, oh, I've got to do that again. And then I'd have it and I'd be like, no, I've got to. And I couldn't get the grip in the hand. And then what I would do is with this finger, certainly in my first game on the second night, I was pushing the dart. I was pushing the dart and I couldn't stop doing it. And I knew what I was doing and I just couldn't stop, to the point where then I was almost holding the dart like this, like completely different. And then it was still pushed. And what I had to do is I had to go backstage and I literally just held the dart with the finger and the thumb here and I just threw it like that.
Didn't it start going in at a slightly different angle as well when you were doing that?
It's like that.
Yeah. And I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Because you're not a pusher at all. That's not what you do.
And then my next game, averaged 90 and won 4-2.
Yeah.
Fourth and five on the doubles. And
you've segmented beautifully again onto a question from Joshua Skinner, who says he's been following along as an audio listener for a while. He loves the content. And he's just been re-listening to some old episodes. Maybe he's in the club. Maybe he's listened to all 64. Where you spoke about the next big star in darts and what will set them apart, he's got an interesting question. Do you think the next star could be somebody who can stack above and below, depending on what section of board they're throwing at to avoid blockers? Now, we've seen Daryl Gurney throw this flat dart. So Daryl Gurney's darts normally stick up, and he's developed a way to throw a flat dart. Now, you might think, well, why would he want to do that? Well, he wants to do that because if he's got 60 left, he doesn't want to block tops with the single 20. So he throws a flat dart, which then leaves the double 20 completely, you know, available. Could we see somebody that could do both, that could land it like me and like you? That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
I think we do see that quite a bit at the minute. I think there's a few people that can do that. I'm just trying to think who they are off the top of my head, but I've certainly seen it on commentary a lot where, like, there's people that can deal with both.
Yeah, and again, I'm a massive Johnny Clayton fan. I think Johnny's in the camp of neither. He's kind of, it's not flat like you, and it's not upright like mine. It's kind of in between. It's almost Paul Nicholson, how he used to throw, and it gets in the way sometimes. He has to switch quite a lot. Talking of which, I thought you could have switched a couple of times, and you didn't as well, but that's... That's just from...
Tell you what, there's one. I can't remember what game it was, but I blocked the 20s, I blocked the 19s, but I needed a treble. And I stood there for a bit like, oh, what do I do? And I moved across, and the only part of the treble 19 I could see was the bottom right corner, and I hit it. I hit the bottom right corner. And we say about this all the time. Like, how on earth can I have the whole open treble to go out and miss it? And then when you go right, you've only got that, like, tiny little corner there. Can you hit that? Yeah, no problem. Bosh. Like.
Yeah. And it leads me on to a great question and something that I do get asked quite a bit. We see players and they'll put one in the treble 20 and then they'll put another in the treble 20, but it's kind of blocked. And you'll see them move across the hockey and aim for that tiny bit of treble 20 that's still available. Mm. Why are they doing that? And why are they not switching to 19s?
Good question.
Yeah. Do they want to hear the 180? It doesn't make sense when we think we've all done it. I've done it. And you kind of think afterwards, why am I aiming at a tiny little target?
I just thought of something else as well. When this goes out Sunday, there might be some congratulation messages coming on here because I might be in the World Championships again. Hey. I haven't told you yet, have I? I'm going to Budapest. I haven't told you yet.
When are you going to Budapest?
Later.
What, today?
Yeah.
Seriously, this is the guy that I get 1,000 text messages a day from. We speak non-stop 24 hours.
I only booked it yesterday.
So what's Budapest all about?
It's the World Festival. So you've got the World Open, which I'll play in on Friday, and then it's the Lakeside Qualifier on Sunday. And because I was quite encouraged by Modus, I was like, do you know what? Sod it. I'm going to go to the World Championship Qualifier on Sunday. So I'm going.
This is the WDF World Championship.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not available to enter the PDC one. Although we have spoke about that before. I think the PDC should have an open qualifier for one spot. I think that'd be great, actually. I think it'd be really, really good. Do you remember the old Riley's UK Open? Does that still go on, the qualifiers for that? Or
they do, but it's basically just like an extended challenge tour now.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Spoke very briefly 10 minutes ago about the new board. Sales have been fantastic early doors. You've just shown it on camera. I've got mine. I've shown it enough times. By the time this goes out, if there are any left and you haven't got one, please do get one. So you're going to be, you know, we've hyped about it enough. I want you to now start feeding back in the comments. I've got mine. I bloody love it. Or I've got mine and I hate it. We want to hear both. We want to hear about the new board, what your thoughts are. So please.
It's not so much we want to hear both. We just want to hear
feedback.
Honesty.
Mm.
If you don't like it, you don't like it. You don't have to tell us you do.
Yeah.
You know, and on the flip side, if you do like it, let us know. Like, it's just one of them. Like.
So can I talk about something I don't like? I don't like the darts that have been released this week, Matt, that are £600.
Okay.
What world have we got into where darts are coming out at £600? And not only that, you can't even throw them. And do you know why you can't throw them? Because they're not perfectly, they've got weight on one side and not on the other. Because of the way they're designed, they're not, I can't even think what the word is. But obviously on a dart, you don't pick a dart up the same every time. It doesn't matter because it's a cylinder and it's the same all the way around. So it doesn't matter where you pick it up. If you add weight on that barrel on one side, but not on the other, then it ain't going to fly properly. Think about, you know, what I'm trying to say there. So I'm not. So you can't even play with them. But my point is the stuff that's come out, the price. Where are we going? What are we heading towards a grand for a set of darts? I mean, where are we going?
Are we now getting to the realms, like within the toy collecting world for me, where it's, you know, like I collect retro vintage toys, but that doesn't mean that the companies aren't trying to rope me in with other things. For example, I like the Power Rangers Deluxe Megazord. Now, that was originally brought out as a toy. That was brought out for me to play with. Now they bring out a Power Rangers Deluxe Legacy Edition, which is made out of die-cast metal, which is meant for the purposes of looking really, really good and really, like, realistic and really, really, like, a quality piece that I'm meant to put on display. And they're going to charge me £400-£500 for that rather than £100 for the Megazord Deluxe that was meant to be played with. This is not to be played with. This is for a display piece. We moving now into a realm where darts, because it's becoming fashionable at the moment, that we're starting to see display pieces? Because I see people on TikTok, on YouTube, that have cabinets now, similar to like I've got with like my trophies and my awards in the back here. But they do it in a sense that they'll have darts in there. Are darts now becoming not just a throw? Are they coming display pieces?
Well, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. We just brought out the Mike Dedeker limited edition. I'm okay with that. If you should be able to throw with them if you want. It is a dart at the end of the day. If if you want to play with one of those figures, you can play with it. If I buy a limited edition golf club, I can still use it on the golf course, right? They still should be usable, point number one. But second of all, £600. Like, I get it. If you were buying one like you do that's 20 years old, that there's none available anymore, you're going to have to pay a premium. But paying a premium to begin with, what, are you saying that £600 dart's going to be worth £2,000 in 3 years? I don't think so. Darts is a pub sport, Matt. How have we got to this? I'm all for limited editions, right? I'm all for... I don't know, bring out a Matt Edgar 21, 23, 25, but one in every 100 set sold is a gold edition, right? And you don't know. Nobody knows. It's in a sealed box. It turns up. Oh, my God, I've got the limited edition. It's something special. It's like you've won the Willy Wonka golden ticket. I'm okay with that. But laying out £600 to look at a set of darts, I'm not getting it. Because guess what? They ain't cost £600.
Okay, right. I'm going to go back to, so let's think about the customer. What does that customer look like? As you just said, they're darts in a pub sport. Do you think Dave, who comes in our comment section with his orange squash, is buying a £600 set of darts?
No.
You know, he's not doing that. So he's not the customer. It's the same as Pokemon. Pokemon cards are a big thing right now. People buy them because they've got resale value. They know if I get them, leave them for a little bit, when they come off retail, they'll go up because there's chase cards. I also now do believe that there's a lot, the market that will buy these darts, they will be on eBay in a period of time, because what they are is they're not for your general consumer. These are for those people that, like, for example, that are doing the YouTube. They're for resellers who think they're going to go up in value. They'll sell out. They will sell out because it's a strong brand. And I think with that, you'll have people buy them to sit on them until they're sold out. And then you'll get, I mean, what is it, 2,000 limited run? I would say 10%, 200 of those will probably get churned through eBay or different Facebook groups at a higher price than £600 because...
But if they're not going to get used, then this is where you've got an issue. So, for example, let me give you a really good example. I collect whiskey, as you know, bottles of a distillery called Ardbeg. The reason they go up so much is because half of them get drunk. So people will buy them as a limited edition, but they want to taste it because they're whiskey drinkers. I want to taste it. What does it taste like? The minute they take the seal off, that's no longer a collectible. So my issue with the being 2,000 sets at 600 quid is how many of those are going to get taken out of the packet and thrown at a dartboard? Because unless it's half, then the resale value, it is not going to be... Unless the demand is a million people for 2,000 sets, which it isn't, it's very hard for them to appreciate massively unless some are getting lost, used, broken, you know, that sort of thing. And if they're not, if all 2,000 right now are sat in display cases, then it's hard to make a case that that's a good investment. I don't see it. You know, the thing with your wrestling figures that you have to pay a premium for now is because the ones that you're buying have either been played with, or they were lost, or somebody, you know, they ended up in the bin by mistake, or they ended up in the charity shop.
It was 30 years, a long time. Yeah,
they were taken out the packet, so immediately the value's gone. So, yeah, I'm just not quite sure what rabbit hole we're going down with that. And you've probably got in your head the same sort of person that I've got in my head for who might be buying them, and I don't think it's our listeners. I really don't. I don't think it's hardcore darts players and darts fans aren't buying them. I don't see it.
I agree.
Yeah. So that's just my kind of take on that. Right. I've got a note here to talk about Jeff Smith. Now, I could talk about Jeff all day. I famously beat him to get my tour card. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. Lovely, lovely guy. But you texted me midweek and went, remind me to talk about Jeff Smith. So over to you. What's happened?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you'd forgotten. I thought you'd forgotten then.
There's two things to do with that. So the first one is to do with poor, lazy journalism.
Ooh.
I think I've started a war on journalism recently in the fact of how they mislead at times in order to get views, clicks, various different things. I know there's a lot of journalisms that are probably listening to this right now who are probably thinking how to twist or turn this in a way to do exactly that. And I hated what they did to Jeff Smith. You've just said it without me even teeing you up. Jeff Smith is one of the nicest guys going, and they put a very misleading title out. In 2025, the average consumer of internet content is lazy in the fact that they will read a headline and make an opinion on something before they've read the article or heard firsthand. The great thing about this is you can hear what I'm saying right now by coming to this podcast and listening to it. But if someone read a headline, would they go, right, I'm going to read the article. Right, I'm going to go hear what Matt actually said rather than this edited version of this article and listen to these exact words right now. No, they'll read the headline, they'll make their opinion. They put a headline out that the way it was worded, you could have very easily thought that Jeff Smith was caught up with match fixing. So Jeff Smith called out on his social media because he had posts after he lost at Modus. He had some posts from gamblers messaging him saying, oh, you fix that match and all this sort of thing. And he shared it because there was like, oh, I hope you die and all this sort of stuff. Oh, I hope your family die of cancer and all this sort of malarkey that you get as players. By the way, Mark, that's something we didn't speak about. When you lose, the abuse you get and the threats of death constantly. That's another peril of the job. But when we was looking at that, and they so Jeff Smith called it out, and he goes about being accused of match fixing and stuff, and they worded the headline that it looked like Jeff Smith was involved, and it was like, how can you do that? Because that could be so damaging, to somebody, and oh, it was awful. Awful.
Well, the society we're in, Matt, doesn't read the rest of it; they just read the headline.
Yeah,
you know, that's why TikTok's so popular. The world we're living in now is, oh, I'll just read that sentence. Oh, right, I'll make my own opinion now.
Yeah,
that's awful.
And to do that to Jeff, and Jeff, I think, shared it on his Facebook, and he's like, I don't like the way this is worded. And it was worded so badly. And they even used quote. They even used part of his quote in the title. And it was like, oh, like, especially when there has been issues in the last few years. I read the comments, and there were so many people in the comments like, what a twat, oh, what scum, and all this sort of stuff. It's like, whoa, read it, stop and read it. And I hope that the people that wrote the article are listening to this right now. And I hope the people that wrote that article read the comments and the reaction of, even if just one person had that opinion about Jeff, that's your fault. And it wasn't just one person. There was a lot of people that had it. So I hope you're in here, and I hope you take responsibility for that article that you wrote, because it was awful. That being said...
Send Jeff an apology.
Yeah, because you could have sold him out big time there to something that potentially could cause harm. You know, you don't know. Well, if someone's had a bet on this and they see that, they were, oh, he fixed it. Like, I lost because of that. You know, it was so misleading. But one thing about Jeff, though, as well, is he was made to make a choice. He had to go to Lakeside, or he had to go to the ADC Global. And he chose the ADC Global. So a positive spin there, that he's got his £60,000 tournament coming up. But please don't do that to people again, guys. Like, just think about your articles. Yes, you want your clicks, but remember there's a person on the other side of it as well. So as much as you want your clicks, just think about how damaging it could be to that person's reputation or career.
Yeah. Stop being a helmet. Right. What else did you want to say about Jeff?
That was it, really. That was it.
That was it. Well, I've got one question to finish with then. It's from Ivan. We know Ivan. He's on every week with a good question, is Ivan. So he wants to know, well, his first question, I knew the answer to. Has anyone ever hit a 170 finish on a $9? No. Right. Thanks. That's quick answer. But what he wants to know is, one for you, Matt, why does the one marker on the PDC have an earpiece in?
The one near the referee, that's why. So he's in communication with the backstage.
Okay, why?
So for many reasons. We had a broadcast outage. There's going to be a break coming up on this. Nine darts until we're back. Coming back in a minute. Could you just keep an eye on so-and-so is encroaching the exclusion zone? Any reasons. So that's just a communication thing. Technically, you shouldn't be able to see that, because they should be wearing it in the right ear, which is stood to the side of the stage behind the referee. So if you have seen it, you are very, very eagle-eyed. Well done. Yeah, you shouldn't be seeing that as such, because there's another referee. So there's a second referee off stage who is sat with all the screens and monitors, and he's in communication as well. So the second referee is just off to the side of the stage, and he's in talks. So there's a lot going on. It's the same with commentary. Like, you think we just sat talking on the game, but we're listening and talking to, like, when you're not hearing me speak, I'm probably having a conversation with somebody else. Or I'm listening to somebody, or while I'm speaking, I'm listening to somebody else. So yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on.
You mentioned the encroachment zone there, and I've noticed we've got a camera on that area now, because they show it quite a bit, and sometimes they show it from the board and you can see the player behind. I've seen one or two sneaking into that lately. I know the rule is you shouldn't be in that whilst the other person is throwing. Is it a case of the referee has to then give them a warning, or is that, you know, I mean, is it a case of, right, whoever it is, you're doing it, you're getting too close to the player in front, you're in the encroachment zone, please stop doing that. And then second time, what happens next? Is it, if you do it again, it's the game's null and void? I mean, what happens?
So it's one of those things where it's not an electric force field, like, get in here, we're going to taser you, like, sort of thing.
That's a great idea. Oh, Christ, I best stab it. That's for the next Premier League. Love it.
Where some people don't, look, he's got his, I see pictures on Facebook, he's got his toes inside.
Yeah.
Grow up. Like, it's like with football, you're meant to throw it in from the point of it goes out the pitch. And everyone takes a few steps anyway. And it's only when they take 10 steps, the ref goes, hang on, mate, you're taking the mick now. You've walked down the whole side of the pitch. Like, But you don't have to like do a run up and throw in from there. You take a few steps, you do your run up, you throw it. So you gain a bit of ground. So it's exactly the same as that. Now, if it's not affecting anybody, it'll carry on. Like you can stand inside it as long as you go around the outside, really. Behind, it's not too much of an issue. It's one of those rules that is there to be used if it's needed to be used. It's not one that's enforced where they go, hang on a minute, your toes are in, stop the game, get back. Yellow card. In terms of it, so how the system works is you get a warning, you get a second warning, you get deducted a leg, and then you forfeit the match.
Wow, which we've never seen, which is nice that we've never seen. I've seen them been warned before, very rare, very, very rare, but I have seen that. Nobody ever encroached behind Richie Burnett when he was throwing. You know, you stood your distance.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. That's episode 64 wrapped up. We'll be back with 65 next week. Maybe we'll debate the right way to go on 65 because I believe it's treble 11. Matt and I will be back with more debate, more hot topics next Sunday at 7. Thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to hit the subscribe. And don't forget to hit the follow if you're on audio.